Wednesday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. Last time we were with you, we talked about the Kawhi pathetical. This time out, we are talking about the backup plan in the unlikely scenario the Nets don't get their 2 to 3 stars. Who do they sign? Should they sign anyone? We're going to get into it next, along with the Brooklyn Nets schedule on the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
You are listening to Locked On Nets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Gavin Shaw. After 3 to 4 years, there's a lot of debate over this, covering the Phoenix Suns, I moved back to my native New York to cover your Brooklyn Nets, enjoy this offseason, recuperate, and hydrate, get back on the bandwagon, cover them again. And I am joined by your favorite host, the best in the game today, Josh Bass.
I mean, if the game is just me versus you, then I'll take that as a compliment. But in the greater scope of podcasters, I know my place, Gav.
I was probably just referencing Papa Shot. I think that there's a case to be made. Like, I don't want to assume anything, but you theoretically could be the best Papa Shot player in the world.
I think I'm up there. Also, I was on fire when we played ball last weekend.
You were. I hadn't played. This is a good story. Friend of the show, Marcus Barahal, a couple other friend of the shows who will go unnamed because you won't know who they are. Like to play pick a basketball once or twice a week. Jeremy Kaplan, he's been on the show. He's in that category. And Josh used to play with us a lot. Hasn't played with us in about a year. Comes out on his birthday last Saturday. And just pops 4 threes the first game. It was wild. I didn't expect it. You absolutely were on fire.
I was on one. Yeah, no, it was good to be back out there. Usually my schedule doesn't allow for it, but maybe I'll need to make more exceptions. I'm too busy podcasting and just thinking about the next podcast.
Yeah, that's all you do with your time. All right, we are going to start this one off getting into the Nets schedule. The entire schedule for the NBA season has been released. Some really exciting games on the docket. The Nets are not necessarily a part of a ton of those, at least from an objective big picture point of view. They only got one national TV game, which I believe is tied for the least in the NBA, though that is an improvement over last year where, Josh, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think they had a single game on national TV.
I think they might have had one NBA TV game.
Sure.
But ESPN and TNT, and that's definitely being an emphasis to the league this year, to make sure every team gets at least one ESPN and TNT game. So it's the Nets, the Kings, the Hawks, I believe, all, there might be someone else in there, but all those teams with one game on national TV. So, you know what, I don't have a problem with it because I love the Yes announcers and they do a great job, a lot of fun recurring gimmicks, but it'll be nice to hear the national media kind of talk about the Nets and probably get it wrong. So
yeah, well, the game is on ESPN and it's actually against the Cavs, so it seemed like they were almost trying to kill two birds with one stone, and they're like, all right, like if we put these two teams on, no one's gonna watch anyway, so let's just get it out of the way. I think it'd be funny if Rucco ended up calling the game anyways.
Yeah, no, that would be good. Would he try to instill Who Am I on the ESPN broadcast?
That'd be great. If he just got confused, it's like, all right, you know what time it is, Who Am I, and just nothing pops. So Doris Burke, What the fuck, Ryan?
Doris will be like, Doris, you have no wins this year.
Doris, you have lost every game. You're almost as bad as Finarkle. She's like, who's Finarkle? Yeah, I don't know.
I hope he does that, actually.
Yeah, could be ripe for comedy. I'd like if they were cool enough to lend it. I think they might do it if they lend it out for ESPN for a game. That'd be fun. Anyways, big picture takeaway on the Nets schedule in terms of actual basketball application is that it starts off relatively easy and it ends pretty hard. All this data pretty easily visible from the Nets schedule, but gathered by Brian Lewis of the Post, so we'll give him credit for it. From November 23rd to December 26th, the Nets play 13 out of 17 games at home, and they only have to fly once during that stretch, and the flight is just to Chicago. Their other road games are against Washington, New York, and Philadelphia. So they have over a month where they don't really have to travel all that much. So if you think the Nets are going to be in the heart of the playoff race, they'd have to have, you'd think, almost like a fifth or sixth seed solidified at that spot, particularly when you look at how the schedule finishes. They have a season-long seven-game road trip from March 13th to March 28th, and then they come back, and their final six games of the season are all against teams that made the playoffs last year, and that includes the Celtics and the Raptors. So, again, it's kind of fascinating because the way I could see this going is if the Nets aren't in prime position going into that final 13-game stretch, there's a pretty heavy incentive for them to start sitting guys and try and lose as many of those final 13 games as possible. Or, even if you don't do that directly on the court, it seems like that could happen either way.
Yep, no, that would definitely be unfortunate. A couple games against the Bucks. The Nets always play pretty close when you're going up against a star player like Giannis. You can never take your chances. So, yeah, Nets do have a pretty tough schedule to end the year. Season ends a bit earlier than usual. I think at least maybe 4 or 5 days normal, earlier than normal, April 10th.
Yeah, no, that is usually, I remember, like, the last game every year is almost always on my birthday, April 14th, if anyone's looking to send me presents. Yeah, no, that is a little earlier. Obviously, they have that early start time, but that's fascinating because, again, like with the way the schedule works, you think they would want every day possible to give teams like one less, two less doubleheaders, and that 4 days could make a difference. So I'm not really sure what's going on there. Maybe the Nets just end.
I actually love that they're starting the season about like 2 weeks earlier than they used to. This started last year, obviously, but it's so great to know that basketball won't be. I feel like whenever it starts at Halloween, it's always like two things going up at once. Like, oh, I want to go out and see everyone, but also the Nets Pistons, you know, like
can't miss that.
No, it's great to have that
Little Caesars Arena.
Exactly. Drummond.
Yeah. Anyway, so I guess I neglected to mention that the Nets opening game, October 17th against the Pistons, and then their home opener is against the New York Knicks. And I didn't have this in the rundown, Josh, but we can touch on it quickly. A little bit of trash talk in the Twitter sphere lately. Spencer Dinwiddie going back and forth with Enes Kanter. And, you know, I'm a Knicks fan first. I make no qualms about it on this podcast, but like Enes is just like, I love him. I think at his core, he's a really good guy, but he's just so wishy-washy with like his loyalties and like the stuff with LeBron was so weird. Like I couldn't help but like root for Dinwiddie in this exchange.
Yeah. Well, you should root for Dinwiddie against anyone, cause he's the man. But also, yeah. I mean, I don't mind Enes. I think he always tries to like make good with his old teammates and at the same time clap back against people like LeBron and whoever else comes at him. So he's trying to have his cake and eat it too. And he just needs to figure out if he's going to be the nice guy that everyone loves or kind of just going to be the villain on Twitter.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I think he's he doesn't really know who he is a lot of the time. It certainly in terms of social media, but some of the stuff, I don't know. I thought it was a nice little back and forth. I also just saw, I totally missed yesterday that the Nets did officially guarantee Spencer Dinwiddie's $1.65 million salary, which was pretty inevitable, but nice that it happened. And Dinwiddie quote tweeted, and look what a simple Twitter beef gets you. LOL. All jokes aside, this is a blessing. Thank you to the @Brooklyn Nets organization, Sean and Kenny specifically, throw in Adam too, my support system, and most importantly, Elijah, # audience of one. And again, that just tells you the kind of guy Spencer is. Probably getting, or very obviously getting underpaid relative to how he played last year. Still very appreciative of it, and hopefully he'll make that up next summer, whether it's on Brooklyn or not. All right, we will wrap up the first segment of the Locked On Nets podcast, and when we come back, we'll talk about the Nets' backup plan in free agency next season. Thanks for joining us on Locked On Nets. Before we get into the Nets' backup plan in free agency, I wanted to give everyone a heads up that we are starting college football coverage on the Locked On Podcast Network. That's right. Your favorite college team, at least by the end of August, will have their own podcast, and it's perfectly timed because college football is right around the corner. I know I will be looking out for our guy, Eric G, who also hosts the Locked On Thunder podcast. He's taking over Locked On Oklahoma. That is going in my podcast feed right away. So you can just scroll wherever you get your podcast, find your alma mater, and tap in to get some college football and eventually basketball goodness as part of the Locked On Podcast Network. All right, with that let's get into it. The backup plan for the Brooklyn Nets. So last podcast, we talked about them potentially getting close friends and shared singers of Vanessa Carlton's, I want to say, Thousand Miles. They sang that together when they were on the Olympic team in 2016. Kyrie Irving and Jimmy Butler. If the Nets strike out with those two, if they strike out with Kawhi, in the almost inevitable scenario that Kevin Durant is not on the Brooklyn Nets next year, who could they go after? So I literally just ran through the list of top free agents and kind of went guy by guy and tried to see if they made any sense. So Josh, I just want to run down this list I wrote down, and you can tell me when I'm being crazy or if like someone's like a feasible fit for the Nets. Klay Thompson would be ideal as kind of a rich man's Allen Crabbe. I don't think he's particularly realistic. I don't think he's ever leaving Golden State, and I think if he did, he'd probably go play for the Lakers.
Yeah, I mean, Klay would be amazing. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. So I don't even want to talk about him.
Sure, he would be.
He's a West Coast guy. He's not gonna go to a team.
On paper, though, like the perfect shooting guard for this Nets system.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, he's the perfect shooting guard for a lot of teams.
Yeah, that's true.
He doesn't need the ball, and he's a good defender.
Yeah, no, he really. He's awesome. Underappreciated. DeMarcus Cousins. I think we could kind of skip over him. It makes no sense with Jared Allen on the roster. All right, first guy that I thought was semi-feasible, Kemba Walker. The pros from New York, I think, again, he's from the Bronx, so grew up a Knicks fan if I had to guess, but again, who knows what the Knicks will be doing, who knows if they're going to be a mess, and if the Nets decide they want out of the D'Angelo Russell experience and they decide they want to allocate a lot of money to the point guard position instead of just rolling with Spencer Dinwiddie there and trying to maximize talent at other spots, I think he'd make a lot of sense. I know he's 29, but if you could get him to agree to something similar to what Kyle Lowry agreed to, like maybe max money for 3 years, I think he'd be really successful in this Nets offense, and he brings an ability to break down a defense combined with supreme outside shooting that no one else on the Nets roster currently has. And I think he's the type of player that could pretty clearly take this Nets offense to the next level. And that's kind of a little bit of a middle ground where he's not going to make you a finals contender, but I think he would make life easier for a lot of the young guys the Nets are trying to develop.
Yeah, if they decide to go the route where they want to make the playoffs as opposed to kind of tanking and kind of blowing it back up and kind of before building it again, then Kemba Walker could be a good option because, as you mentioned, he'll be a bit older. I'm not sure how many suitors he'll have, even though he's a really good player. But the only thing I would say is that the Nets tend to like bigger point guards who can switch and cross match between the one and two, and Kemba Walker is pretty much the opposite of that. But as you mentioned, he would be a far superior offensive player to anyone the Nets have had in recent years.
Yeah, and he's tough defensively, but you're right, he wouldn't necessarily be able to hold
him up. He's not going to be able to hold up one-on-one.
No, 100%, and obviously he's like on the back end of whatever contract they'd sign him, he'd be into his 30s, so that would be the other risk there. All right, what do you think about Chris Middleton, who is a guy who I don't know if I've directly seen him linked to the Nets. I don't know why in my mind I'm thinking I read something about that, maybe not, but I mean on paper would be kind of like a somewhere between Klay Thompson and Allen Crabbe in terms of talent, but very ideal in terms of the type of wing you'd want with what he brings on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, I think he's another guy like Klay that every team's going to want him.
Yeah.
I feel like Milwaukee's going to give him the max, and they've given him a lot of opportunity to shine, so I think he seems to be pretty happy in that situation. Ideal player to be alongside Giannis, so I doubt he'll leave. If he does, I don't know what specifically about the Nets would attract him, because I think he's someone that's better as the number when he has a player like a Giannis or someone else that can be a lead ball handler and dominant player, and he can be the number two guy playing off them and also take the tougher assignments on defense.
Yeah,
I don't think he would go to the Nets because there's a feeling that he could be overexposed, but obviously he's a great player and would be a great fit for any team, Nets included.
Yeah, no, I'm fascinated to see what kind of contract he gets, because I thought like,
he'll definitely get the max.
Really? Yeah, no, because I guess just like based on him as like a regular season guy, like I feel like he would be like an artificial max type, like just one of those guys that we've seen the last few years that gets the max because of the inflated cap and teams feeling like they have more room than they actually do. But then you look at how he played this postseason. He was ridiculous. 25 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 1 block.
Averaged 20 points, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists last year.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's like solid, but I don't know if I think of those as max numbers. I guess with what he provides.
He did shoot 61% from 3 in the regular season, which he did in the playoffs. So.
Yeah. That's true. Well, that's what I was gonna throw that out there. Yeah, and 60% from the field as well. Yeah, he was insane against Boston. Like, I think it kind of got underplayed because obviously they ended up losing the series, but like he was the shot he hit to tie, I can't remember if it was game 1 or 2 in regulation, and from like 40 feet out, was just utterly insane. And the fact that he was that good against that Boston team that obviously went on to beat Philly and like push LeBron and Cleveland to the end, like he was really might have taken a step forward and kind of confirmed himself as like an all-star level talent, especially in an Eastern Conference that's fairly depleted this season.
I think he's a pretty good bet to make his first All-Star team this year.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely looking forward to what we see out of him. I generally agree with you though that I think him and the Nets doesn't really make sense in a big picture sense. Like the scenario where he would make sense is actually what we were talking about last podcast, where if you got 2 stars and you wanted a third guy who would maybe agree to take less money to get to New York and join a team that could contend for a title, like he'd be the perfect guy in that scenario. Again, not super likely, but that would be the arena.
He'd be on the Lakers also.
Yeah, for sure. It's amazing. I'm so interested to see what the Lakers do next offseason, because obviously KD's the first choice for them, but even if they don't end up with KD, it feels like the world is kind of their oyster, because there are so many talented guys and they're obviously going to have a lot of money, and all those guys, like, outside of the fact that you want to go to LA, you also get to play with LeBron. Like, I just feel like they're going to kind of have their pick of like basically every guy I'm listing here, so I'm fascinated to see how that one goes. All right, next guy up, Tobias Harris. In my mind, he's what the Nets thought Alan Crabb could potentially be when they offered him that massive contract that Portland ended up matching. But he's actually worth that kind of money. He's one of the most efficient mid-range / perimeter scorers in the league. Really jumped up dramatically as a shooter, because was always a guy who had beautiful form, but that never translated into a great percentage. And then last year, he obviously shoots over 40% from 3. He's not quite as valuable as someone like Middleton, because he's not as good defensively, but I just think his shooting ability would be kind of an ideal fit in the Nets offense. And he's another guy like Kemba Walker, who's from New York, so he would make a lot of sense on that front.
Yeah, I like Tobias Harris, and he's definitely improved a lot since he came into the league, and I have to give him a lot of credit for that, because coming in, he was more of a slasher type, and he's done a ton of work, as you mentioned, to make his jump shot a huge weapon, 41% from 3 this past year. My big thing with him is that his main calling card is scoring, and he's not super efficient as a scorer because he really does not get to the free throw line a lot. I only averaged about 2.5 attempts per game last year, which for someone with his usage, he's relying only on threes and kind of mid-range jump shots. So I would, for someone whose calling card is scoring, I would lean in another direction if the Nets even had an opportunity to get him. I don't know if I'd want them to acquire him.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, and not something I necessarily considered. I thought kind of like Middleton, like he'd be a good fit in the scenario they get like a Kyrie and Jimmy Butler, Kyrie, Kawhi. But even then, like, I think they would lean towards
Carmelo. And if Carmelo doesn't work on those teams, then why would Tobias Harris?
I mean, Tobias Harris is a lot better than Carmelo is right now.
I mean, right now, but yeah. even like a few years ago, they're a very similar type of player.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean,
Harris, I have to give him credit because he's a much better 3-point shooter than Melo ever was, but he's just not as dynamic as a scorer because Melo was amazing at getting to the free throw line in his heyday.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess, like, again, like when you look at like the type of player Harris is, like, you could argue like it's poor resource allocation to give him a ton of money when I'm saying they would sign him assuming Crabb isn't on the roster in a year. But even with someone like Joe Harris, who's kind of similar and actually gets to the rim a little bit more than Harris does, and is paid a lot less, and obviously isn't quite as good, but like, do you need two of those
Harris
guys?
Harris is more of a 4, so it would more be a replacement for like guys like RHJ and sure. Damari Carroll.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's take one final break, come back, talk about 5 more guys the Nets could possibly sign, and then maybe we'll push this one to a part 2 and next podcast. we'll get into, is it worth signing a guy who will make the Nets good but not great, next time on the Locked On Nets podcast. All right, one final segment on the Locked On Nets podcast. We're going to run through a few more guys the Nets could sign in the scenario they don't get a superstar. All right, Josh, I'm going to throw two restricted point guards out at you, and you can tell me if you have interest in either. Terry Rozier or DeLon Wright?
And how does D'Lo play this year under that assumption?
I don't know. Fine. Same as last year. A little better. Improvement. He's better defensively. He's more efficient.
Maybe DeLon Wright if he's cheap.
Yeah.
Because especially considering that Dinwiddie will be a free agent after this coming season.
Yeah.
But Rozier, I think the problem with him is that when you have someone that is going to be your lead ball handler, you want them to be a bit more dynamic of a shooter and someone that's more consistent than he is. So even though he's a great defender, I think he's better off in a lower usage role, even though he did surprise in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think just because of how the Nets play, like it's so essential they get shooting at that point guard spot. And I mean, if he figures out how to shoot, like he could be, I mean, it's tough to say one of the better point guards in the NBA, but he could be like an upper echelon point guard just because of everything he brings defensively and with his competitiveness. But that shot would have to improve a lot this year. But he's someone who I think will be available for the taking, depending on how deep Boston is willing to go into the luxury tax, just given the fact that they paid Marcus Smart. They're going to have to pay Kyrie. There's talk of them going out and trying to get someone like Anthony Davis to add to that core. They're going to have to pay Tatum and Brown. In the next few years, I don't think they could necessarily match whatever Rozier's going to get. And it's going to be interesting to see if the Nets are one of the teams that will throw him that money. DeLon Wright, I'm with you.
Also, couldn't they match and then trade him?
Yeah, no, definitely.
Because if it's a value for them, then it might make sense for them to do that. But depending on timing.
Right. And I guess that, again, that comes down to how much money he signs for and like whether he's still tradable. At that point, though, again, based on the way he played in the postseason, he'd likely nab an asset unless he gets way overpaid. DeLon Wright, I think you're 100% right on it. He's a good Dinwiddie replacement if Dinwiddie goes somewhere else. If they're both available for about the same money, you probably keep Dinwiddie just because of his familiarity with the Nets. I think Wright is gonna. I think Wright's not like his like super ceiling, but like his. Where, like, I realistically expect him to get would be somewhere close to, like, the level that Dinwiddie showed last year. So he'd be a really logical replacement if you get him for less money. And obviously with Toronto committing to Fred VanVleet, there might be an opportunity to steal him away. All right. Nikola Mirotic, I think he's a guy, like, especially, like, if the Nets get a star or two and they're trying to fill out the roster, like, he makes a ton of sense as a complimentary piece. Even if they don't get that guy, like I think we were both saying this last year with how well he played after getting traded to New Orleans. Like he's kind of the ideal power forward in this Nets system, and the guy they so lacked last year when they were trying to fill that spot with Quincy Acey for most of the season, and then Dante Cunningham towards the end.
Yeah, I mean Mirotić is a really good player. He's someone that I've always thought would be a nice Nets target. The thing is, he's very inconsistent also. I mean, he was amazing on the Bulls at the start of last year. Was productive on New Orleans, especially given that they had a huge hole after Boogie went down. But he's someone that I would be a little bit concerned about giving him a long-term role because he's someone that could also shoot you out of a game as much as shoot you back into one. But definitely, if the price is there, he's a top talent. The only thing with him is that he's not as young as people think, because he spent some time in Europe, so we'll be 28 by next offseason. And for a player like him, who's not super athletic to begin with, has the potential to fall off a cliff a little bit as soon as he loses some sort of quickness.
Yeah, no, I think if they signed him, like again in the scenario that they're not signing other stars, it would be kind of a JJ Redick type deal where you either give him a lot of money for 1 year or 2 years, because presumably he would want to end up on a contender. And like this would be like if he like either like missed the boat was signing with the right team, or like none of those teams offered him the amount of money he wanted, like the Nets could potentially be a good landing spot for him. And again, it seems like Brooklyn, and we're going to get into this more on our next podcast, is heading in the direction where they just want to make the team as strong as possible on a year-to-year basis, and they're certainly not going to mortgage the future for that. But while continuing to build up their young stars, they're going to try and be competitive. And in my mind, Mirotić is the perfect guy to complement those efforts, and someone who could also make Jared Allen's life a lot easier. Like, if you have a truly dynamic shooter at that four spot and one who can hold up enough defensively to play big minutes, I think that could really really open up Jared Allen's offensive game, because the lane is going to be significantly less clogged.
Yeah, no, it would be a nice fit if Bryce is right.
All right, J.J. Redick, a guy we mentioned last time around, would make a lot of sense for him, so he doesn't have to commute to Philadelphia. Again, like, I think, like, you listen to him talk on his podcast week in and week out. That guy, the most important thing is his family, but he is dying to win a title before the end of his career. So I don't know if he'd accept a Brooklyn offer unless, again, they got stars and we're looking like some level of a contender. If not, I could see him sticking around in Philly and potentially retiring there. All right, I'm going to wrap this up with three vets who are kind of on the back end of free agents, but nice two-way guys who could potentially fill out the Nets roster. We got Al-Farouq Aminu, a nice two-way guy. Danny Green, Ricky Rubio, who, again, would just be kind of perfect vets on this team, just guys you absolutely want in your locker room, and would both help the Nets win some games.
Yeah, I mean, all those guys would be nice vets. I think no one that I'm really clamoring for, Danny Green's, well, I want to see how he does outside of the Popovich system, because he's fallen out of favor with the Spurs in recent years, has a fresh start now in Toronto. We'll see if he can kind of rehabilitate some value. Aminu would be okay. He's a pretty good two-way guy. Rubio, I actually am pretty interested in. I think if D'Lo doesn't have a good season and the Nets decide they want to part ways, but also guys like Kemba don't work out, and they don't have really the draft capital to spend assets on a top-tier point guard, I think Rubio could be a really nice 1 or 2 year stopgap.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And again, he's someone who every stop of his career, and this was before he could, I'm not that he's like a great shooter, but like, he seemed like he turned into a competent one last year. Like, even when he was quite literally statistically one of the worst shooters in NBA history, he was a guy who makes his team better when he's on the court year in and year out. He's been doing it ever since he was a rookie. I think he'd be immensely helpful to the Nets young talent. And I thought it was pretty interesting. David Griffin was on Howard Beck's podcast, the What a Beck pod. And he mentioned even that he thought, like, the fact that that Rubio was injured for the Houston series was really underplayed. And he was saying that series, like, could have potentially been pretty competitive if Rubio was healthy. So I think that's a big testament to how he's viewed throughout the league. I don't know what Rubio's mentality is. Maybe he wants to stay in Houston. Maybe he wants to go to a contender. But if a big city like New York is appealing to him and playing with a young group of guys, I think that could be a lot of fun. All right, good place to wrap up the podcast. We didn't get to it this time, so we'll talk about it next time. Is it worth it for the Nets to sign guys, like we just mentioned, like players that will clearly make them better, but not necessarily strong enough to contend for a title? We'll get into that next time on the Locked On Nets podcast.